Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Unknown Show. On today's show, we're going to have Jen Mikowski, the founder of JMWW and the author of Could You Be With Her Now? We're also going to have William Seward Bonney, who's going to read some poems and talk about his upcoming book, Galaxy vs. Sabretooth. First on the show today, I'd like to welcome Jen Mikowski. She's the founder of the lit site JMWW, also the author of the book Could You Be With Her Now, and the forthcoming novel The Tide King. Jen, are you there?
Yes. Hi, bud.
How you doing?
Well, I really like your opening music so much. It sounds like air. It makes me want to buy a phone. It's very futuristic.
Yeah,
and high-tech. It's
my favorite band these days. That's Black Moth Super Rainbow, they're called.
Oh, okay. I'll have to look them up on Spotify and check them out.
Yeah, they're great. It's the band is Black Moth Super Rainbow. That album is called Cobra Juicy. Just came out.
Mm.
Great. It's like a great album. And I was lucky enough. I found the record downtown, so I picked that up. Got my little. My little hipster radio record player sit next to my desk and play it often, you know.
Excellent.
You like
I always
that
love
too.
When. Yeah, I love. You know, I always love because you get to a certain point in your life where you just start listening to everything that you discovered when you were in your 20s, and
yeah.
I'm starting to go back there, and so it's always like delights me when I hear something new that I really like and can get into and pass along. So.
Totally. I mean, I'm hooked right now on, like I said, you know, we got all these records sitting around our apartment. We live here uptown New York City, me and my wife. And just we've had, like, records and records sitting, like, everywhere and piles, but we haven't had a record player in, like, probably, like, since we've known each other, so it's been almost 10 years. They've just been, like, hate to say it, like, decoration, you know?
And now you can't move,
like,
because you can't move records. They're just, like, 500 pounds a box.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
How do people do it?
I don't know.
People had more upper body strength in the 70s. They could move boxes of records, and they could also park cars without power steering. Both of these things boggle my mind. Maybe we'd be in a lot better shape if we did both of these things. More.
Yeah, we just, like, disconnected our power steering from our cars and just started
carrying around
all our music.
Putting, like, a 20-pack of records in our backpack or whatever and taking them around to work. But, yeah, The Brooklyn scene is really great. Just to say one more thing, I want to shout out, I loved Grizzly Bear and the Men and Cymbals-y Guitars. I just love that whole, everything that's coming out of Brooklyn now is just, like, amazing to me. So I just wanted to shout them out because they're awesome.
Well, they are awesome. We should all get together and have some beer, you know?
Yeah, because you know them. They're just a hop skip over from, actually, I do know Washington Heights is a little far, on the far side of Brooklyn. Just because a cousin of mine lives there.
But my weapon is I get a call up here. I drive it all over the place, and, you know, it changes the rules of the game a little bit in the city having a car. But
that's
I commute
true.
In and out of Jersey every day. But
it makes you like a Don in the Mafia to have, like, a car
in
New York. They're just very, very rich and very, very powerful.
Yeah, I got to pretend like I don't have a car or people need help with stuff. But otherwise, I definitely have a car.
Yeah, because then they might, it's like when they secretly find out you're a billionaire or something, and then they just want everything. But I understand. So, yeah, like, I hate to take up all the air. You're the host. Hello?
Hey, you there. What was the podcast you did earlier?
It's called The Inverse Delirium. It's here in Baltimore, Jeffrey. It's called The Inverse Delirium.
Yeah,
it's
Inverse
a comedy
Delirium.
Cast. Yeah, it's Jeffrey Welchman, and he does these little sketches and invites local artists and national artists on to perform these sketches with him. And it's really great. They're really funny. And this week I was on, not together, but he also had Paula Poundstone call in and read from Edgar Allan Poe, which he does with a lot of artists. They'll come on there and they'll read to Edgar Allan Poe to promote our literary legacy. But yeah, we just did a great skit, and I'm always really nervous. Like I don't think I'm a good actress, or I'm not really good at reading from a script, and I'm always worried I sound like the athlete on TV trying to sell you like insoles or something. So
yeah.
I feel like we did it like 5,000 times, and then then beautifully, like Jeffrey must have just stitched every single word to every single word of the best sentence I did together.
Oh, together. That's awesome.
Yeah. So
that was like the funny thing with like you know, like back in the day, you know, you had to like actually you know, hit things with like one take. You know, if you were in a band or whatever, you had to like, mm-hmm. you know, not to put down bands today, but like, you know, you had to actually be able to play your album straight, you know, play your song straight through, and now it's like cut and paste everything, and it's different, but it's more fun. You can definitely do some cooler, weirder shit, I think.
Yeah,
with less rehearsal, you know. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, you guys had this whole like universe that I don't even know about. Like I think about like 10 years ago when there was like bloggers were really just starting out and really popular, and you had these sort of blog rings and you followed each other and commented on each other, and there's this whole universe now, like podcasting, you know? I mean, sure you're like in this podcast ring, and there are several other underground shows I've never listened to that now I will check out. And the same with Jeffrey's universe. Like, he has so many comedy podcasts that he's sort of linked to in this way. Now, I'm going to go to bed tonight, and I'm going to have a terrible migraine headache because I just didn't know this, you know, about this world before, like, last week. Because, you know, my first book came out in, like, 2007, and,
uh-huh.
you know, my publisher had a, hello?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm here. Go ahead.
My publisher had, like, Tumblr, and then I was like, what's Tumblr? I didn't even understand.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure I understand now what Tumblr is. now there's, like, everything is just, like, crazy. You can do podcasts. I did a video interview a few weeks ago, and I did it at the home, which was probably not a good idea because I had two very inquisitive cats and a blind dog, and they were just sort of all around the equipment, especially our blind dog, Sophie. And I'm like, you just have to sit there because I don't want you to knock any expensive equipment over, and she wouldn't do it, and you just hear her toenails as she's like walking around, clicking around during the interview, and I was like, I don't want to hold her because I don't want to look like a crazy cat person. But eventually, like by halfway through the interview, I'm like holding her, and then she's like, you know, and then I see the cats like climbing in poor David's like really expensive like bags where he holds like his cameras and stuff, and over like his shoulder, I just like give one of them evil eyes, it's like shoot them a look. It's like they're looking at me or can see me or even care that I'm, you know, telling them to get out of his bag. And I'm just imagine like someone watching this interview and I'm making like these crazy like tics, facial tics and like evil stares at someone, you know, behind David. I'm just like, God, maybe I'm just not cut out for like all this new technology. It's just maybe I should stick to, you know.
I don't know. I think you're doing okay. But I know what you mean. Like I used to like right now, things are a lot different, like than they were even 10 years ago with technology. We could talk about that probably until the both of us die, and it would just keep going. You know, everything's outdated; things keep getting replaced. But that brings up an interesting point. Is probably right around the time when you were starting your blog, like you're talking about back in the day, doing blogs, commenting on blogs. Like I think mm-hmm. of MySpace. That's like the era that I'm thinking back to. Are we right around mm-hmm. the same time period?
Yes.
And then from MySpace, what happened? Did you make JMWW at that point? Was that earlier?
I think it was a little bit before MySpace. It was 2006 or 2004. And I really didn't really, there were like a couple of websites that had like rings of journals, but it was nothing like it is now where you can just, there's just this huge thing that you sort of step into and it, there's so many degrees of separation. Before it was really hard and painstaking. It was before MySpace, and once I got on Facebook, it was a lot easier to make contact with other journals and do things. And but yeah, it was it's constantly been growing. Like you said, it's hard to always keep on top of everything. I still find myself hard coding parts of the issue, and I'm like, God, I'm like a fossil. You know, here I am, like hard coding.
Yeah.
I'll just tag, and you know, we don't use a whole lot of Java, and maybe we should, but, you know, it's hard to, but you do it because the same reason you write, I guess, because you don't know what you'd do with yourself if you stopped. And
yeah.
Just that feeling of when you the night before you're publishing, you know, you're publishing a story, you can't wait to spend a world or a poem or, you know, and also that they chose, you know, your site. You know, however it came to be or got there. You know, you are the one that gets to spread the word about something. Yeah, you know, I guess it's kind of like music in that way. You have this proprietary interest in really great fiction that you want to, but at the same time you want to share it. So obviously, I've met a lot of great editors over the years on and off the journal. I know one of our own, actually, Robert Vaughn was on last week. On the podcast. I had to listen because I wanted to make sure I could like hear everyone's voices before we like talk, because you know, you never know what people sound like on Facebook. There should be like some sort of like sound app, because I always think that everyone that I don't know sounds like Morgan Freeman, even the women. So it's always
Yeah, read all their like statuses in like an Imperial British accent, you know.
Or like the kind British lady who had us on hold in the queue when we were waiting to come on the show. It's all very professional. I feel like such a professional tonight. You know,
sound really professional. You sound really professional.
It feels like a new bar of soap. Like you just opened it, it smells good, and you can't. It's perfect. You know. Yeah. So how long have you been doing the podcast? I didn't have time to listen to all the shows, but. I mean, I'm just amazed that you do it every week and that it's like over an hour every week. Sometimes I don't even talk more, like an hour's worth talking since I work at home.
This is kind of my excuse for a couple things. I mean, I don't talk on my phone ever. Sorry, man, but, you know, and interviewing writers on it.
Yeah, I don't talk much on the phone either. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I'd like to see people, or if not, then just because I'm a writer, it's easy for me to write things down, to communicate by writing. I'd rather email people.
I thought it was like an excuse, you know, to be able to talk a little more to people who I want to talk to on the phone instead of communicating through email all the time. Because, I mean, losing the verbal communication with people like how it used to be. If you liked to ask a question and it was too weird, you come up on the phone and talk to them. There's like this distance that keeps growing with digital, you know? Like if I want to talk to somebody, I have to send them a Twitter message or I have to send them a Facebook message, and we have to communicate through email. But
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Are you there?
Okay, yeah. This like rolling dead zone. It's just like moving through our house or something. Because I haven't moved, but sometimes it's actually like Twitter. I wonder if the tweet has actually gone out there into that huge abyss, you know? You're from New York, so you understand this. Like, I don't go out much, but when I do, like, people are still, like, there's no interaction. Like, people... We live near a large hospital, Johns Hopkins, and there's a lot of traffic back and forth, residents and doctors and employees going home and going to work, and everyone is plugged into their iPods, and there's really no opportunity to catch someone's eye and say hello. And sometimes I feel like if I just talk to someone in the park, that they think I'm, like, insane, you know?
Yeah.
Because
well,
or sure, broken their bubble of space.
Yeah. The truth is, when you do that to somebody, they think you're insane for about 2 minutes, and then they realize that they just need to get their head out of their ass and have a coffee. And, you know, because cool people, and that's how they have fun, you know? I mean, I understand everyone's, like, you know, they're making sure they can retweet it and stuff like that, like, immediately right now. But, you know, come on, give me a minute. Let's talk in person, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think it's just ironic because in New York you can't escape people. I mean, you're in, like, a subway car crushed with people. And
yeah.
People find this way to sort of, like, zone out and have their own little planets. You know, 80 people
yeah.
in a car in their own little space. And it's just ironic because that's what people came to New York for, was that you couldn't get away from people. They were just there, and they, you know, for better or worse, they fueled your creative juices, you know?
Yeah.
The only people who talk to me outside now are, like, the guys who drink at the park. It's really weird, you know? But I said, thank God for them, you know?
Yeah. Like, what is... I wanted to ask you, what does JMWW stand for? I have, like, a couple of funny theories here. Does it stand for Ben Chairman Gillespie's wacky website? Or,
it actually, like, way back in the day when it was a space that I bought for, like, just to post some of my own, like, pre-blog, post some of my own, like, links, and it was, like, Jen McCaskey's written word or something that I abbreviated.
That was
But we always just sort of say nothing because it's fun to hear what they say. For a long time there was a lot of mostly women working on the journal, so we joke that it was journal managed by wicked women and men sympathetic to their cause. So, but it's interesting for people to come with us with their own theories, you know. I've asked the editors over the years if they've wanted to rename it, and they've said no, so we've just sort of stuck with it.
No, it's cool. It's great. I work in construction, and, you know, working construction, there's, like, you know, acronym for everything stamped on stuff. So you'll see just, like, 4 letters stamped on, you know, different companies, 3-letter companies, all the time. Just boxes coming in and out, stamped on vessels where I work, stamped on pieces of machinery, and you'd be amazed at how many times I see almost JMWW stamped on stuff. It's just like, it would be like JWMW or JWW, and I'm like, it's so funny. It's just always one letter off, you know. I gotta take some pictures, I'll post them. Just different
Are those, are they companies, or are they, like, it's not like TNT?
It'll be so many random things, you know, like a truck will come in, it'll be like a trucking company, or it'll be just, you know, stamped on the side of a big container, who knows what's inside, just different things come and go. I work in an oil refinery in New Jersey, so it's like every day, just like millions of different stamps and cryptic numbers and shit everywhere.
It sounds dangerous. Does anybody smoke there? I hope.
Yeah, there's, like, designated smoking areas, you know. There's, like, designated areas to go and get blown up, I guess, whatever. Yeah, it's dangerous. I mean, you know, it's like a dangerous kind of fun job, like, only because I get a lot of time to think and I down narrow my brakes and stuff. But it's hard work. It's enjoyable. It's fun. Like being in the army, actually. Like,
I feel from it actually feels kind of romantic, you know? Like, with working in America at the turn of the century, guys on skyscrapers, you know, or building the
building. Oh, no, it totally is. It's like
a heart pain poem or something.
Yeah. Industrial. I mean, it's heavy, you can get every industrial work, but at the same time, there's, you know, I work union, so everybody's really trained well and smart, so it's not dangerous per se. But it's fun. Come with me, Jen. I'll get you in the gate. You can come work with the Boilermakers Local 28 at the Baywood Oil Refinery. We'll have you signaling the rig and welding. It'll be great. It'll be.
I'd love to wear a hard hat and carry those little earplugs around.
Yeah, you get all the earplugs.
The glasses,
I smuggle earplugs home when I want to take a nap. It's great.
Yeah, I'd actually like to get my hands dirty. I have to warn you, though, I can't even hang like a picture straight. So, I would take a lot of training.
Yeah, I don't have much training either. I just, I get involved a little bit, but we all help each other out. So now this year, you have so many cool releases coming out. I read your book, Could You Be With Her Now? And I really liked it. And if you could explain to anybody who doesn't know what the premise of your book is, Could You Be With Her Now?
Sure. It's two novellas, and they're both really different, but they have a lot of surprising similarities. The first novella is called I Can Make It to California Before It's Time for Dinner, and it's told in the first person point of view of a mentally challenged boy named Jimmy, who sort of he doesn't have a whole lot of supervision, and he wants to. There's a girl that he loves on TV named Megan.
Uh-huh.
I imagine she was like some sort of tween on Nickelodeon or something when I wrote it. And he wants to go out and find her because he doesn't understand, that she's way 3,000 miles away, probably in a studio in LA or something. And he goes out and interacts with a girl who sort of looks like her and accidentally winds up killing her, understanding that this has happened. I mean, this happens like in the first chapter, so I'm not like revealing anything.
That was the best part. It was like this is like the first 5 pages, probably.
Yeah, so like you can decide whether you want to put this down now. So he doesn't understand. He thinks that she's just make believing her sleep the way his older brother does when he wants him to leave him alone, with her wrestling or her just bugging him. He'll make believe to sleep. This whole thing ensues, and the police and maybe his family are starting to put two and two together, and his brother Josh like tries to hide him from the police, and he actually gets lost while he's hiding and winds up hitching a ride with a trucker. And the trucker, of course, none of us in a million years would get in his path, but of course Jimmy does, and all sorts of increasingly terrible things happen from there until the end, and I won't say anymore. But it was challenging to write from his perspective. I have to say that once I got into his head enough and heard his voice and really knew that was his voice, it was a lot easier going. It just, sometimes you just wait for that sound it's like he was telling me the story, so it was just sort of his scribe sort of writing it down. In the second novella, kind of came to me the same way, but it was just a dream. Like I had a fully formed dream, and I woke up and was like, that was interesting, but I don't know whatever I should write it down. And I didn't know if it was something that anyone would want to read beside me.
Yeah.
But I went ahead, and as soon as I heard the voice for that, too, I wrote it down. And it's basically a story about an older woman named Sandra. She's in her 60s. She's a widow. And her daughter wants her to, like, set up a blog and sort of write her memoirs down so that her grandchildren will have them before she passes away. So she hires like a younger woman. She puts out an ad like at Barnes & Noble, and a woman in her mid to late 20s comes, and she works at the bookstore, and she's a writer, and she's going to help her get this blog set up and help her ghostwrite these memoirs so they sound good. And they they have this unlikely friendship that turns into a real a romantic relationship, and it's sort of in this bubble of Sandra's condo, so it's like it's almost like a limbo or a purgatory of some sort of place, a way station. And not only until they go outside do they realize all the obstacles what are in front of them in terms of this relationship, whether it's Sandra's daughter or her regrets or her memories or Alice's friends or the fact that Sandra's older and much older and health is an issue, and I wrote it down, and it took me a few months to write it, and I put it in a drawer because I was like, well, I don't think anyone's going to want to read this, and a few months later on a whim, I entered into the Press 53 Open Awards contest because they have a novella entry. Not many people have. There aren't many places to publish novellas, discovered, and I entered it into that contest on a whim and actually won first place that year, so which was great, but I didn't really know what else to do with it until the first novella, the California novella, was taken by DeVanc, and it's since it's only a novella, they asked me what I wanted to do with the rest of the book, and I thought about, well, I should just pad it out with a short story collection. Josh Weil had the year before published a 3 novella collection called The New Valley, and it was really great, and they worked against and with each other so well, and I thought, well, I could probably do that with these 2 novellas, so I pitched it to Dan and Steven, they liked the idea, and that's the book, and I just love when people find, like, commonalities between the stories, because Matt Bell was my editor at DeVanc for this, and I had to say I had a really hard time coming up with a title for the book, and it was through Matt's wisdom that Could You Be With Her Now, which is actually a line from the second novella, May, September,
yes,
was one of being the title, because it did seem to tie the thread of mortality and death and fragility between them. So, so that's how the book came about. It came out, it was published in January, and doing some readings and doing great stuff like this, and yeah.
That's great.
I'm glad that you read it at work. Like
I did. It was. I wanted to tell you. I'm actually. It was great because I don't read too many books at work. I actually do a lot of writing at work, and they just think I'm like fucking around on my phone. So it's great. You know, everybody thinks I'm addicted to text messaging. I love to write at work. You know, I wrote a novel in November on my iPhone just sideways and.
Is that the one that's coming out in April about the Tobias?
No, yeah, that's something
the
different.
The Crazy
Tobias
Collector?
That's a little older, you know, finally getting my shit together and having stuff edited, you know, that's the trick, you know, I mean, you know, in youth you can do all this shit, and then as you get older you're like, oh, fuck, I guess I better have someone, help me with some copy editing, because it's embarrassing after a while. But I took your book to work, and it was, first of all, it was a shock to the guys I work with because they're kind of like totally like, you know, and in their defense, I think they're cool, but I'm just saying they're like totally like straight mean potatoes kind of guys, like, you know, Levi's, you know, white Nike sneakers, just regular, but you know, button-down construction workers like you'd expect from Jersey. Am I bringing like sushi or like Indian food from the city for lunch? You know, it's like they lose their shit. They're like, what the hell is that? You know? So here I am with your book, and your book has a really cool cover. Like it's a really cool picture of a woman in like a white smock and red lips, and it kind of almost looks like, you know, to like the outside eye, like it could be like maybe like a romance novel or something, you know. And so I'm reading. It's white, you know. It's white, and like I said, I work in an oil refinery, so my hands are dirty, and I know I'm just going to destroy your book. It's going to be, like, black by the time I'm reading it. So I feel bad, you know. But the guys are like, what are you reading? And I'm like, I just want to read the book and be left alone. So I'm just like, to cut to the chase, I just, as quick as I can, just kind of, like, break it down for them. I say, listen, this book is, it's 2 novellas broken up. The first one is about a mentally challenged kid. He strangles a girl to death and goes on a run, gets picked up by a trucker, and bad things happen all across America. And then the second novella is about a 20-something-year-old chick who starts dating a 70-year-old woman. And they're just like, what the fuck? I want to read that, you know? It's just like the reaction of the two subject matters. It seemed to intrigue the construction workers in Jersey that I work with, and I know I liked it, so I guess that's a good sign. You know, you're doing something right.
Well, yeah, thanks for introducing my book to a new segment of potential readers. I always, you know, joke to people, I'm like, this isn't the notebook. Because, my mom's always, your mom's proud of you, my mom's proud of me. But, you know, they don't read the same things, obviously. So I was just like, when this book came out, and she bought some copies for her friends for the holidays. And I'm like, man, I hope she read it first before, she's giving it to her friends who are going to read it and think that I don't know what they'll think. But, I always say you can't choose what you write about it. It kind of chooses you. So we just have to go with it,
And I think you can't really judge. You definitely can't judge a person on what they write either, because you meet some of the Swedish people who and they write like Bondo, sadomasochism. Not that that's bad, but I mean, you would never picture, So you're not gonna read that person's book and say, oh, this person writes hardcore erotica, and then you meet them in person and they're just a sweet librarian woman, really buttoned down. You know what I mean? It's obviously the work separates itself from the off. In real
absolutely.
Life.
Yeah. I always think everyone has a mother and they're probably mortified at some point. If I were a mother, then I would have something because I would be at some point.
Yeah. At least if you're not mortifying people, you're doing something wrong anyway. You find someone to mortify.
Yeah, you have to. I'm a good little Catholic girl who, just trying to find your way in the world.
Rock on. or in heaven. You're trying to find your way into heaven. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So you also have two other books coming out this year, which is awesome. You're like my hero with, not with the fact that you're having things published. Like, that's another story, but just that, getting down, working title, and really, really, seems like I like to write. And that's what I admire, how successful people are with their stuff, great, good for them. But just the daily getting down to it and writing. And you have two books coming out. I'm familiar with the title of one, The Tide King. And
That's coming out in May.
From here.
And that's coming out from Acquiesce Books in November. So I was lucky that there's a good bit of spacing. There's actually space just right. If you wanted to have three books come out in a year, this would be the best.
Mm-hmm.
Spacing to have them come out January, May, and November, because you don't feel like you're really shortchanging any of them. But it's been tough. I mean, I've obviously done the journal for a long time, and I've co-hosted the 510 reading series here in Baltimore with Michael Kimball, who's a very, very famous author, and we've been doing that for about 6 years. And so I've written for the Nervous Breakdown and some other things. So I've had some experience in like promotion or just knowing how to get stuff done, but it's still been really difficult just to have to try and, it's funny because the spring issue of JNWW came out today. You have such great timing. And I interview Tara Laskowski in it. She's the editor of Smoke Long, and she also has a really great collection out called Modern Manners for Your Inner Demons. And we were talking about, sometimes people will come to us and it's like their first book or their this or that, and it's like they're like, I don't know what to do, I don't know how to do promotion. And it's like, well, if you're asking at that point, then it's kind of like already too late. Like, you have to, it's really something that you develop over the years, like contacts with people and networking, and above all, it has to be, I mean, Tara says it really well in the interview online, that it can be kind of slimy if it's not done right. You have to be sincere, and you have to like read other people's work and read, the books and presses that you like and that you may submit to. You have to, participate in the community, whether it's interviewing people on podcasts or writing reviews, and you have to do it without the expectation of getting anything back. You have to sincerely love being a reader as well as a writer. And, I don't think a lot of people get that, because she was saying, sometimes people friend me on Facebook, and as soon as I accept their request, they'll send me like a link to their, their book that's coming out. It's like, it's 95 minutes ago, and it's like, you have to have that personal connection, with your reader.
Exactly.
Even if you get
a
publicist or something, you really have to be someone that people have a relationship with and care about your work, and you care about them.
I mean, I'm still at the stage where I like talking to people because, and you got all the guys, but I understand what you mean. Like, it's a wilderness out there for some people that just don't, they don't enjoy maybe they don't enjoy the networking end of it so much, and they're just looking at it like a race, you know.
I mean, it's a tough time. There's so many books coming out, and you know they're more than ever, and there's just a lot of noise out there, and you have to make yourself heard without seeming pushy or slimy.
Yeah.
Or it's just, I mean, I'm every day I struggle when I send something out, like an email out to promote an interview I've done or something. I feel slimy. I'm like, here I am sending this out to people, and do they really want to hear it? And it's like, I have this like inner like fight with myself every day that I'm like, well, if you don't send it out, maybe there are people who did want to read it, and do it. But at the same time, it's like, you know, it's hard promoting yourself, and you feel bad about it. And I don't know anybody who actually feels at peace doing it, but it's just
promoting
a necessary,
yeah.
I guess, evil. Yeah, and it's so much easier as an editor of a journal to promote your authors, or as a reading series co-host, you know, to promote your readers. But when it comes to promoting yourself, it's hard, you know?
Do you want some advice?
Yeah, I would love some advice.
I think now it used to be Puff Daddy, P. Diddy. Be more like him. You should get like a big white fur coat, and you should just bling out your mouth with diamond teeth and just live it, you know. Just open champagne bottles and spray them on everybody, and just do that, you know. And just does that seem like something you could do? Like just be more like a rap mogul.
I don't know. I think like the La Font Terrible, or excuse my French. I think they do get away with a lot more. You can
still
love redemptiveness. You can be a complete asshole, but if you're nice to someone, then they're willing to give you a second chance. You know, it's almost like it's weird in society. There is a lot of that going on, but I don't know.
I think you're doing good. I think people want to hear your interviews. But I understand what you're saying, the sliminess of it, and almost like a little bit of guilt. Like you don't want to. There's so much noise, and maybe it's like every once in a while, you know, I'm sure everyone probably feels that way. Just that the internal, like maybe I should shut the hell up, you know. So.
Well, I think it's just something. I mean, everything now. If you go on Facebook or your Gmail, it's always trying to sell you something, you know, you know, I looked at a pair of tennis shoes Saturday, and it's like just following me around wherever I go, Facebook, Gmail, this damn tennis shoe is like following me around, you know, trying to get me to buy it. And it's just like, how do they do that? And I'm just waiting for like, you know, the future is here, Philip Dick. And I'm waiting to go outside and just see the hologram of like the tennis shoe.
It's like a hologram projected onto your feet already, you know? Like,
oh,
my God.
It's going to happen. It's totally a Philip Dick world, and we're just, you know, trying to deny it. But it's crazy, you know? So, yeah, but I think the best thing we can do is just enjoy each other's work and be sincere and just take a step back. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just happy that I'm able to keep writing. That I'm not blind, and I'm my carpal tunnel is coming along great, but you know I can still type, and you know I'm just happy that I'm able to do this and meet so many great people in the community.
When your carpal tunnel goes, you know, gets completely bad, you know, we'll hook up because I'll weld you a set of claws. You know, you can keep.
Yeah, you should. I want like some Wolverine claws or Hawk hands.
They'll be like the Terminator
hands. Hawk hands. Yeah, Hawk hands probably won't work so well on the laptop computer.
No, it'll be like.
I want to have a hand that I can hold a beer in, and not it won't get knocked over. So Hawk hands good for that.
Yes,
has the cup holder in it, and you can punch.
I want to thank you. I want to thank you for coming on the show. Your new book's coming out, and I hope everybody checks out your book, and I hope they like it as much as my coworkers seem to like the premise. That's called Once Again. For people who are listening. The book is called Could You Be With Her Now? And it's out from the Zank. Is that how you pronounce that? It's D-Z-A-N-C.
Yeah,
the Zank Books. Pick that up. And I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Jen, thanks for spending some time with me.
Thanks so much for having me, Ben. Have a good night.
Yeah, talk to you soon. All right, bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, next on the show, we have on William Seward Bonney. He's a poet from Texas living in Colorado. I think. I don't know where he lives. Maybe Colorado. He's heavily involved with Tiny Amp Records and has a book of poetry coming out on 420. Are you there, William?
Yes, sir.
How you doing, all right?
I'm doing phenomenal. How are you doing, bud?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, I was just talking to my good friend Jen there, and she's got a lot of stuff coming out, and that kind of inspires me to keep writing my stuff, and I hope that it did the same for you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's always inspiring to hear others share what they're doing, and because everybody's doing their own self in a different way. That's one of the nice things about this day and age is you can access, like, so many different writers from everywhere with, you know.
Yeah, they're everywhere. They're fucking everywhere. Whenever I go to a party and I'm just, like, there minding my own business, you know, someone will come up and just start talking to me, and in the course of the conversation, it seems like if I accidentally say I like to read or I like to write or whatever, and then the conversation turns to writing, guess what? They have an idea for a children's book, and I'm going to help them. And then they need to tell me for the rest of the next 3 hours of the party all about the book, all right, great, you're going to write it. Now we just got a team. We got to find an illustrator. Do you know anyone who can publish it? Or, you know, what are we going to, where's our, where are we going for our tour, you know? Can we possibly option this for a Pixar film? Do you know anyone?
Yeah.
I'm like, get the fuck away from me. I need to get another beer. I need to get away from you. That's, you know,
yeah.
You got to keep ducking these children's book pictures. They're everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, there are some great writers out there, but it is amazing how many business people there are today, quote unquote. You know what I mean? Every time that you go anywhere, it seems like you're bombarded with, like, all these job opportunities or really great sounding opportunities.
Yeah.
It's just always strange. It'd be the line of Whole Foods with your Dill Havarti and your tortillas made out of spinach, and the lady in front of you is like, hey, you have a beard. Have you ever thought about acting before? And you're just like, get away from me, please. Like, I don't know what your mind's thinking and where you want beards and films coming together, but I'm not a part of that.
You could be, though. And I want to tell everyone listening out there, if you don't know William Seward Bonney, or if you don't know the legend of his beard, it's actually, I was looking at the rankings, looking at the site right now, beard, bestbeard.com. You're actually number 18 out of 1,500 ranked beards in America currently. That's pretty
really?
Good, man. You're number 18, which is
what
pretty
is
incredible.
Website?
Bestbeards.com. Check it out. You're right there.
Oh, my God. I can't believe they caught up in doing my own things that I don't even peruse the internet. Oh, God.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you're on Twitter, and we're Twitter friends, or I don't know if you can be a Twitter friend. I follow you, you follow me, so.
Yeah,
I think that means, like,
we're stalking each other.
We're in each other's, we're in each other's cults. That's how that works. when you're on Twitter, though, you know, you're talking about people giving you business opportunities, and that's all that is. All the time, you know, mess from.
Yeah, from yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I wish I could be one of those guys. What do you have to do to get into analytical internet sales pitching? Do you have any expertise in that realm?
Yeah, I do not. I really don't. The guy that I work with, because I do the Sunday show for America, if you don't know, Earl presents Tiny Amp vs. the Literary Underground. And mm-hmm. The guy who runs Earl, man, he's a wizard at that. Like, everything that he does is 100% all American made, but it's also, like, just all internet based. Like, he just talks to people from all over the country, like, all the time. And I'd much rather call someone on the phone. You know what I mean? I don't even know where to begin with going on the internet to start, like, trying to be a business person or something. Like, unless, of course, I already know the people in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's.
And then if I'm getting like, trying to tell me shit, I'd be like, well, of course I'll buy it because you know who I am and I don't want you to get all weird and come and shoot me, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. Straight up. And that's why I pin names and different things. I tend to run with that. I think it's a lot safer.
So listen, all joking aside, it's time to get serious. What is your, I know you're going to give me like a bullshit answer. What is your expertise right now? What is your current, how can I say it? Like, what do you do for a living? Are you able to talk about that?
Yeah, I am able to talk about that. I work at a medical marijuana dispensary in Denver. And yes, there's a lot of legal tape and background checks and different things that everyone involved have to go with. So my soul is sold to a certain extent, at least all my information is sold, I guess, to someone. But yeah, it's, you know, whenever you can kind of be on the forefront of ending prohibition.
Yeah.
And it's like, honestly, it's a very eclectic group of people from all around the country. Denver is a very central hub, not just location-wise, but just a melting pot of people from all over the country.
It's, oh, my God, it's, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. So you got everybody. It's amazing how many people I've met who have moved out here, including myself, simply to be a part of the industry or just to live in a city where the industry exists. Like, it needs to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot actually, needs to happen.
I actually have a friend who moved to Denver because he is a marshmallow artist, and Denver is actually the best place in America to acquire marshmallows in bulk. His name's Army of Peeps. Really? He's a marshmallow sculptor. Yeah, he does like the Titanic and a marshmallows, all kinds of stuff.
That's crazy. That's, you know, those kind of jobs that you never even imagine or dream of. That's really awesome. I would love to do marshmallow art.
I'll hook you up with my friend Army of Peeps. He's right there in Denver.
Yeah, no, that's that's super cool.
Yeah.
Oh man.
So listen, I want to tell everybody who's listening two things. First of all, we were just talking about how William here he sells weed legally at a dispensary, but he's on the show today because he's an interesting fellow here, and he's also a poet. So I want to talk to him about his poetry and get away from all this daily grind crap, but. This is a great opportunity because we actually have a caller on the line who is a really interesting person, and I'm gonna bring this caller on, and she can say hello. I know who she is. I'm gonna pull her on. Maybe you can guess who she is, William. Caller, are you there? Caller. Sometimes there's a little lag here with the computer. Let's see.
That happens.
I think she's live now.
Is that me?
Who's this right now?
Is that me?
Is this you?
Is this me?
I think it is.
I'm checking my vagina real quick. Hold on a second. Make sure it's in place.
Oh, because you're calling from your wife's phone, man, and it came up as your wife's name.
Yeah, exactly, man. I'm going all covert. I thought I'd sneak up in here and like throw Bud Smith, the host, off guard, and he was all excited to talk to Lindsay Thomas, and
Well, no, I tell you why I got excited. First of all, everybody listen, this is Frankie Metro, another great poet, and we have William Seward Bonney on the line also. But Frankie, listen, man, usually the switchboards just give me a number, like a random caller number, and I get all fucking lost. I have to like reference a zillion times my paperwork here to see who's who. And then for the first time ever, I see a name pop up on the switchboard. I almost lost my lunch. I was like looking around. I'm like, holy shit, am I getting haunted? Am I being haunted? it could have said, like, Satan. I would have had, like, the same reaction.
Oh, man, I'm totally switching my Skype name now, or my wife's Skype name, to Satan.
Oh, that's what it is? Those are Skype names? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's great. So how's it going over there? You're calling from New Mexico, right?
Yeah, I finally made it back today, man. I just got back in, like, 11 o'clock this morning, so...
Shit.
Like, the
Mountain time zone represent.
Yeah, I mean, like, just trying to acclimate myself with being back in the goddamn desert as opposed to being in, like, one of the greatest cities in the face of the earth. I don't know.
Yeah, no, L.A., man, I lived out in Fullerton, which is, like, 45 minutes outside of L.A., so I was constantly in L.A. and Anaheim and all of Orange County. It's a magical place. It's a very different world than anywhere else in America.
Yep, man. I saw 50,000 motherfuckers with dreadlocks, man. It was like, it was really amazing. And I felt at home. Felt right at home. So.
Yeah, Frankie, I can really see you working out well in LA. Like,
I gotta tell you guys, though, I was bummed because we didn't have, you know, Mr. William Cerebani there. His book and everything through us, and I was really bummed about that. I was also bummed Bud Smith didn't get to make it, you know. But I don't know, man. I just wish you guys had seen the magic that happened yesterday. I mean, it was a pretty goddamn intense read, one right after the other. I mean, from John Swain all the way down to, like, Jamie Neese, back up to it was amazing. It was a really amazing time.
Yeah. It was a great collection of writers, definitely. I was really disappointed that I wasn't able to swing it.
We'll make
time,
it happen
another time.
Yeah, well, you know, you can look at it one or two ways. You can look at it as good news or bad news. The bad news is we're probably all going to be alive for like another 60 years, and that kind of sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But the good news is that we get to do these poetry readings and get drunk a lot for the next 60 years. So that part's fun, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Glass half full.
Yeah. It's totally my optimistic way of looking at life in general.
I love it.
So that's pretty cool that you called in, Frankie, because William here has got a book of poetry coming out, and you're editing it? You're putting it together? Is that what's happening?
I am, actually. It's already been edited. I've gone through it with a fine-tooth comb on my end, as Mr. Colin has.
I want to take my hats off to Dustin and Frankie and how, like, well, beautifully and fast and efficiently that they edited that, went through that, gave me feedback on it. Like, it was amazing. Like, it was, like, I feel like a real writer, guys, honestly, because, like, and then on my end, the reason that the book has been taking a little while is, one, we wanted to release it on 420, and two, the artwork is coming along, and it is crazy as fuck, like, which is what it needs to be. So whenever it's done, it's going to – I sent Frankie one – I sent you one piece today. It's a very simple piece, but, you know.
I'm going to have to check my Gmail, like, for reals. I got, man, I'm so, like, behind right now. You guys have been hard at work and been fucking drinking in L.A. and shit.
As you should. As to celebrate that first issue coming out, that first issue, by the way, oh, my gosh. That was, like, one of the coolest things I've ever seen. Like, man, like, just so gorilla, but at the same time so, like, nice and professional and, like, oh, it's just, like, ugh. Like, literary underground. It's, like, straight up, the cleft jaw, even worse, like, you know, with a bite, like, you know,
We like to bite people's heads off at cleft jaw, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Eat their souls. That's what needs to happen.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, we're talking about, like, William's book here and everything like that, and, like, I really want to cut the record and say, like, I've said this a lot, but, you know, it's our first book put out by Cleft Jaw Press. It's a chapbook, going to be around 40 pages with artwork, poetry. Heart is the key factor of this. I mean, you read so many poetry albums, and, you know, a lot of people go for imagery, they go for, like, you know, genteel language or whatever, you know, and try to, like, captivate the reader with that. And, you know, you can put on a magic show all you want. I mean, it's beautiful, right? Doesn't believe that shit. It pretty much shows through. I'm sorry, guys. Yeah, you'll have to excuse me. I just got done watching, like, Burt Wonderstone not that long ago. So I'm home.
Is that any good?
Yeah, actually it was, man. It was pretty funny. I don't know if it was worth the $10 I paid to see it in theaters, but it's funny. Yeah.
Really?
But no, I mean, like, William's book, man, like, in all honesty, this kid got a completely unique way of approaching writing. I like how he intricates, like, rhyme schemes, like, out of place in a poem, and then jump right back into, like, his thought. I mean, there's a lot of different ways and angles that you can approach his poetry. It makes it accessible to a wide range of generations because, you know, the context that he's talking about, the subject matter that he's talking about in these poems, show that the kid is not a kid, you know. I don't think Andrew's ever been a kid, from what I can tell of these poems. I mean, the guy has always had an uber sense.
A beard,
of,
yeah, he's had a beard since he was 4 years old.
Yeah. I he come out of the fucking womb with that beard, I guarantee it.
It's kind of funny to say that, just I had a very different childhood. Both my parents are Methodist ministers, but my dad was actually a Catholic priest before that. Yeah. So there's that structure and foundation built into it. But then, like, whenever I was in, like, first grade, like, I had, like, grandparents die, uncle die, great aunts died, like, a good friend of mine gets shot at, like, this church massacre in Fort Worth. And then another little girl who was in my class get abducted. And, like,
yeah.
My teacher in first grade really hated me. So, like, whenever I was, like, seven, it was, like, the like one of those big, like, turmoil, didn't understand what actually was happening. So I, like, really exited from everything and then, like, didn't really come back until probably a couple years ago whenever I was, like, eating a shit ton of drugs. And I just, like, I don't know, I started channeling that child again, and that was like a rebirth of sorts. And that was just whenever I started writing and drawing and making music all the time, and just had to, because, like, I don't know, I was a very sad kid, so I want to be a very happy adult. I think that's the dichotomy I'm striving for. So you got to kind of work through all that pain, and everybody works through pain in a different way. So I don't know, writing has been really more of a therapeutic thing than, like, writing, you know? It's what just naturally occurs and what naturally happens and what, like, I have to say, because if I don't, I'll probably just go crazy.
You have anything you'd read today? Do you have anything sitting in front of you read for us?
You know, I actually don't. I'm actually helping a friend out.
I've got some poems from Galaxy vs. Sabretooth.
Good. Thank you for being more prepared than I was.
This is great. Hey, Frankie, I'm putting your check in the envelope right now. I'll send it to the same place.
Yes. Amen to that.
You and Lindsay are gonna have your own air mattress the next time you come out. We might share a room, but you'll have your own air mattress, that's for damn sure.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude. I'm holding you to that.
Mi casa, su casa, mi blunt, su blunt.
Yeah. This one's called This Head Is in a Tumble. It's written by Mr. Andrew Boglin. Try to pull my fucking hair out of my eyes so I can read this shit. I made a conscious effort to be awake in all the tunnels, car rides, bus rides, light rails, and planes. The day funneled out and trickled down the ladder. I was proud to fall down, now even more so then. The only ideas I have begin and end with the thought of your sense. Trends are but a fault. I'm split and at a loss, but the real time is tough. The only thing I ever wanted was trust, but I assumed it was luck. Struck by the night's fire, it's fair to assume these black eyes deal with stares. Brushes with death in the early morning subconscious point to tumors. Rumors which filter torment through these 2020 Zs. Guided words for worlds not finalized. I am but an italicized ink blot on a coffee stain. These teeth are bust rust. I rushed into thinking I'd die young. Now I feel as though I'm dead set on. living longer, stronger, plastered, go-getter, counterculture, ratchet for hire at any corporate chain. I use bleach in preparation of this resume. I pretend I want to buy video games, want to be a manager one day. It's all binary code out in the real world. Smile, polite, intellectual, but not opinionated, easy to remember and hard to pick out of the room. The one with the non-regional accent and nonchalant demeanor. But these feelings are sincerely steadfast, and my pledge is forever underground.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You want to know how that poem came about? One of my favorite ways that a poem has ever come about? All right. 2009, I lived in Austin, Texas, worked at Domino's, which I have since, because of this story, been blacklisted for, can never work at their corporate chain ever again in any state or any country. And
not even Japan.
Nope. And which is a huge pizza market, by the way. And we were watching Man vs. Food, me and a bunch of friends from high school. And I have a friend who's he's actually a stand-up comedian. He's 6'6", 360 pounds. Like, hilarious, dude. But we're watching Man vs. Food, and comes the Denver episode with this huge burrito at this place called Jack and Grill. And he's like, oh, man, I can eat that. Definitely no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And all of us just kind of looked at each other, and we're like, well, we don't have anything to do. Let's go. That's like a 17-hour road trip, so that's 38, somewhere around there, I guess, 36, coming back. So we just set out at like 11 o'clock at night and just fucking hightailed it. And it was funny because we were in my car, and I had to break out my window a couple of months before because I locked the keys in the car. But anyway, so we had this, you know, board flapping, rolling through the night, end up in Denver at like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon the next day. And I'll be goddamned if none of us could remember the name of the fucking place that we were going to. So we just end up wandering around fucking Denver in this like weird high fucking days. And we end up at this place called Old Chicago, which is like a local chain around here. So it wasn't like anything special. We weren't even in downtown. I think we got to downtown for like maybe a few minutes. Then we just got in the car and drove back. Fucking another 17 hours back. And whenever we got there, I had gotten a call. I guess I had left my phone or something. And I just had all these missed calls from Domino's. And they're like, hey, you got a shift. Hey, you're fired. Like, where are you? And I just called. I was like, hey, I was in Denver, my bad. Like, but yeah, I wrote that right after because, I don't know, I was really fucking, I wasn't depressed, but I was out of zest for life. I really wanted to fucking get out of Texas at that point, definitely, so.
There's some angst in that fucking poem. There's, like, I love the contrast between, like, there's genuine love in a lot of these poems, but there's also that little tinge of angst that, you know, we all grew up with, I think, at least in this little, like, cadre of amigos that we have, but, you know, like, that's what I appreciate about it. It just takes, when I read Andrew's work, it takes me back to a time that I didn't even, like, I didn't grow up in the same era that Andrew did, but we're pretty goddamn close, and he takes me back to that time, you know?
Okay, dude, I mean, that really means a lot to me. I mean, like, that is, I don't write for that, but that's how I write, you know what I mean? Like, I write from that perspective of that seven-year-old, you know, just trying to fucking figure out the world, because, like, you know, why ever give that up? Like, that's the most beautiful thing about life is, like, you can always be who you once were if you try hard as fuck. If you try hard as fuck, then you can end up doing whatever the hell you wanted to do whenever you were 7 years old. I have no idea what I wanted to do at that time except for, like, be happy. And I'm getting there. I'm trying to.
Well, that's all you can do is try to be happy, you know?
Yeah, definitely. That is all you really can do.
But what's the plans for this evening? What are you up to?
Oh, man. I'm actually helping a friend right now with a few things.
Yeah.
be too specific.
Yeah, I hear you, man.
Yeah, I feel like my my day job is actually cleaner than my night jobs a lot of the time. Oh. So.
I want to read a poem of yours now. This is a poem in the Cleft Jaw issue 1. If you don't mind, if you don't have any objections.
No, not at all.
This poem is called 12 Steps West. In jest is a test to the fleeting preps. And it goes something like this. Baby, and I've got this weird feeling about rest, like the sun is going to come up again, and all these things in my past won't turn to regrets, but steps to become a greater captain, my captain. I confess, the days where I lost my mind was when I was at my best. The brain has always been an albatross atop my neck. I guess it's better left unhinged. Let your path proceed by its own quest, mold, melt, and stretch through the gilded printing press. If that is what you're best with. Stress has his head in a mess and wits riddles with licks. My heart longs for rest in fat checks. So riddle me this. Is it wrong to obtain investments? Not so I can be rich, no. So I can strap on this backpack and trek and feel all that needs to be injected. Spar with the elements and end up antithesis of the intellectual inept. A force to be reckoned with, unlike the workforce who lives check to check. Specks of pop, whose minds are latched to desks like they still went home to pops when bullies were being dicks. See, in my eyes, I duel these sons of bitches. Make sure they remember the name, location, and instance for dividends. I'll drop relentless sentences. I do it, too, for the women who enter my vision and capture it, frame it, drill it into my motherboard and fraction it section by section into a database. I have the knack for keeping pace. Even a botanist who's always blazed, people claim I'm rarely dazed. Ashamed of my former self, I feel my eyes well as the truth becomes apparent and we send text messages about the things we care about and share our fears. Though it's sparse in our hearts, however far apart, these feel rare. And I lay in my backyard and chart the stars. I realize the kingdom of heaven isn't so far. It's a pretty girl with a good heart, a full pipe, and an open road. And the answer is no, I will never grow up. Because to grow up would go against never giving up. Reply forward. End fucking poem.
Fuck yeah, dude. I love that line, drill it into my motherboard. It's like, every time I hear that, and then I just heard it like, Bud, with his New Jersey fucking New York accent reading that shit. I loved it. It was bravo.
Yeah, I actually like listening to y'all read my stuff a lot more than I like actually hearing myself read it.
Oh.
I think that's just a life most of the time.
Up where I live, every once in a while there's a pretty cool little clique of people. They do like a writing workshop. I've only ever been to one writing workshop. This is the one I went to. They did like a poetry thing where you go and you bring a poem or two and then basically they read it. You read it out loud and then you give it to somebody else and then they read the same thing out loud. So two people read it and then they did like critiques on it and shit. But this girl wrote this poem all about it was just, the whole thing was heartfelt about basically about her vagina, the whole poem. And, aside from that, but I'm just saying, it was really the strangest thing. Just, she passes it to a man and is like, here, read, now you read this. And then he reads it out loud and then everybody gave critiques. And, that's a juxtaposition right there.
Yeah.
Good luck ever understanding that, you know?
I want to read about my heart and my vagina, too. Next time I go.
Well, you can. You should. You know?
Yeah, no, you boys should come on the show this Sunday on my blog talk show, if you can.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
This Sunday I will.
Yeah.
Awesome. No, yeah, but I don't know if you guys caught last weekend, but, man, if you haven't heard Maddie's new album yet, you guys should definitely go check it out, just as fans of music, whenever I heard her playing it, living together and hearing it, it come together, I don't know, it's an amazing, amazing, and there's actually, she wrote a song on the same day that I wrote a poem last year, and we used same lines, and I read it on last week's show, and the song ends, and then I read that poem, and I thought, I didn't actually get into that on the show, but that was a really, I don't know, it really means a lot to me, those two things.
Maddie's also one of the people that's going to be supplying some of the artwork for your book, right?
Yeah, actually, yeah. She's helped me take some of the photographs, and then she did this art piece at her school about just it's like a photo album with all of the key words crossed out and just obligatory photos, you know, like photos that could be just anywhere at any point, and it will like have like scratch out going to scratch out again, you know what I mean? And then like I took one of those, and then actually one of the girl who did my one of my show posters back in December, Miss Chelsea Petosa, is designing the cover for Galaxy versus Sabretooth, and holy fucking shit. I'll give you guys a little thought prequel to see if you can put this together in your mind. It's a Sabretooth shooting rainbow laser beams out of its eyes in space into a diamond reflecting everywhere. Like,
well, there you go.
That's awesome.
It's a trip.
Who did this artwork? Her name is
Chelsea Petosa. She's a absolutely maybe the best graphic designer I've ever met. In my life. She just is a computer in a lot of ways, in the way that
she knows how to use a computer.
Art.
That's awesome. Well, that's the new direction of art. You know, you can always go back to the old school stuff, but it's new. It's growing, and you know, you can start to look at it now as a talent. You know, as not so much like Photoshop used to just be like, you know, cutting Uncle Bob's head off and putting it on Pamela Anderson's body. You know,
mm-hmm.
but
and now that's like common as MS Paint, kind of like.
Yeah.
I mean, not for me, definitely, but for people, general population.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, oh, man, shit. Computers trip me the fuck out. And that's another thing I like to use a lot of, you know, I'm from a generation, I think, you know, all of us are, really. We're the only generation that will ever experience the manual age and the technological age, you know? And I really feel that is a main theme of my poetry a lot of the time, is like trying to juggle that, like trying to just, you know, have my big beard and be able to live in the woods, but simultaneously, you know, come out and do poetry readings and, you know, like actually interact with society. I don't know.
Do you see yourself becoming more and more older?
Do I see myself becoming more as well, what?
A recluse as you become older, as you say, go out in the woods and just...
I think I've always been, whenever I was younger, I would, you know, like, have secret clubhouses that was just, like, me, and, like, it would be in, like, a closet or something, you know, and I had, like a light or, you know, with some books and some artwork and, like, a Stanley videotape. Yeah, I'd, like, hide there for hours and hours and hours, build forts and hide in there for hours, and, like, had a lot of alone time, so, like, it was nice to be, like, you know, because, like, a house as a kid can feel, like, really large, so, like, whenever you can make yourself smaller and get into, like, a smaller, comfortable place that no one knows about, it's, like, it's a better way to be, so I feel like, once again, like... keeping in touch with 7-year-old Andrew and like trying to figure out how to you know, not be an old man whenever I'm 23, which is
I think you're doing a good job, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
I think you're doing a good job. Stay young, you know, like that however Bob Dylan said to do it, just do that.
Oh yeah. You know, after
hey Frankie,
reading,
are you still there, man?
I am. I'm still here.
Do you have any more of Andrew's poems? Would you read another one if you have any more?
Fuck yeah, dude. I sure do. I did want to mention real quick that that Andrew will also be part of another Clefjaw book that will be coming out later on this year called Quad Migos, which will be featuring himself, Dustin Holland, Bud Smith, and myself. And that'll be a good book, I think. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, man, I'm really looking forward to that one. Man. That one's going to be really cool.
Oh, yeah. This next one, man, like, what I need to, like, make this, because I'm sure I'm going to butcher this, but Andrew's got, like, a really unique style of reading. I love the way the guy reads because he's very, like, nonchalant, very unassuming about, like, his presence on stage. You know, he takes his time with his work and doesn't make any apologizes. He doesn't make any apologies for anything, and that's what I like about him. So this one, I'm going to attempt to read it, and it's called Egyptian Nights. I'm riding through the graveyard, splashing through the puddles on this overcast day. My tire track swirls in between the Broncos' tracks, which is now puttering away. Lost are the days of youth, as like I cared anyway. Behind me is a funeral procession, 30 or so cars deep, Mexican family, beautiful, grieving. I hide my face, never turning around. I feel as though I am leading, whomever to the ground. Swirls of colors rupture from the oil and the puddles as they splash onto my red frame bike. Like it or not, I thought, the wind will be coming tonight. I felt the rattle of my bones as the anticipation of first snow now breathes with the combating of fall. I see the mountains in the distance, awestruck with the feeling of winter. The city to the south, bound by memory, standing on the footsteps of a bookstore, smoking cigarettes laced with liquid hydrocodone, all before the hour-long walk through the dirty slush and smog-filled cold, coughing my American spirit, as if I should have known that this American life breeds cancer among sorrow. Back in the bathroom, the shower, screaming with the broken toilet closed, the mist folds the paper to my dairy, or my diary, as the words begin to run soak, dripping, loathe, my heart foams for methadone, but the shivers press on, surrounded by people who love me. I now feel at ease leading the procession of people to a grave meant for me, past the mausoleums between two aspen trees, next to the fence by the tree-laden lake that is here with my empty pharaoh chamber sleeves. That's it. I totally fucked that last line up. I really did. The last line, actually. I knew I was going to fuck it up, man. I really did. But the last line of that actually was, next to the fence by the tree-laden lake, that's where my empty pharaoh chamber sleeps. I love it.
Yeah, that's a crazy one, man. So you do like a lot of rap. You still rap a lot? Or what? Hey, you told me you do rap recording. Are you still doing that?
I do. I haven't made a rap recording in actually a year. I actually, the other night, I had a friend show me some music, and he was like, yo, I really want your honest opinion on this. And I listened to it, and I was like, god damn, this is garbage, you know? Like, you know, you should do this and this and this. And he was like, well, why don't you make some fucking music? And I was like, oh, okay. And that got me back into it a few days ago, so I just started writing again, and I want to fucking get back into it, because, like, I really, a lot of the time, you know, whenever we were in Albuquerque and Zarina was doing her music thing, I really wanted to, that really spoke to me, but I know that poetry readings generally aren't the play, so I want to separate that, so I really do want to get back into music, and I mean, with Tiny Amp and all the musicians and different stuff that I can, that's now at my disposal. I mean, not really my disposal, but, you know, like...
Well, yeah. Yeah, you have people to collaborate with. People to bounce ideas
exactly.
around with.
People to bounce ideas on. Yeah, like, because I've been reading a lot of Hunter S. Thompson again, which, you know, it just kind of happens in Colorado a lot of the time because you're just kind of inundated with it.
Yeah.
And, it kind of, you know, there's some really awesome, like, lines that really breed concepts. Like, there's one line where he's talks about Dr. Gonzo being too rare to live, or too weird to live, too rare to die. And I really that whenever I was first starting music, I sampled that a lot and like used that line a lot. But I want to explore that line I don't know. I really just want to explore a few different lines from a different from different books and stuff, and like be able to use, you know, creative outlet. I don't know. I just want to get weird as shit with stuff. Honestly.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think there's something to be said about just getting as raw and as strange as you can with your art. Actually, the other day, I was pleased as hell to get some reaction from a story. I had a story up and some people commenting that, you know, on Twitter especially, people who aren't expecting it, you know, just that shit was strange. I'm like, that's one of the best reactions you can get if somebody tells you something is strange. You know, you did something right.
That is my God. That's what I always wanted, someone to just walk up to me and just be like, what the fuck? Like, what did you just do? I want to be like, I don't know, but I'm glad that you recognize that.
Yeah.
And also, we're talking about getting a, because, like, I mean, I love rap music and stuff, but, like, my first love is, like, grunge, like, Sonic Youth, Nirvana.
Yeah.
I really like the grindcore punk scene out in San Diego, like, mid-90s, the early 2000s. I mean, it's still going on, but it's real heyday, like, the Locust,
yeah, I love
anything
the
on 31G Records. I mean, out of San Diego was what I grew up on, that and Sonic Youth, Nirvana, and, you know, all those bands. So we want to get a band together, Tiny Ant make a band called Sewer Gators Have Dreams too. So hopefully that will be making music soon. But that's been on the table for about almost a year now. So whenever that happens, because I really, you know, I love Tiny Ant, and I want to contribute in more ways than just booking shows and doing things like that. I don't even do that much, so.
Yeah. Well, I hear you, man. There's, you know, it always seems like there's this danger, though, of just of having, like, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 different projects going and never really nailing any of them. But I think the great job now. And I don't think that you're a victim of that. And keep going with all your great shit, you know?
Man, I really appreciate that. I honestly do. I don't know. I've always viewed life as a triangle offense, especially the way I do my art. Is just, you know,
you gotta
come at everything from three angles if you're going to really dig deep into yourself. If you're going to use, you know, as I was saying earlier, using art as more of like a therapeutic thing, then as like a way to make money or anything, which it's turned into now that I started actually like sending it off to places and stuff, which, you know, that's exciting, but it's meant to help. And I think that's what a lot of people don't realize is art helps whoever creates the art. And it really helps. And it really lets you work through some things and like to feed off of, because I know you make music too, bud, and to feed off of writing a song as opposed to writing a poem,
there's
two completely different things, you know?
Yeah,
it's great to,
especially like getting into programming like electronics and stuff, programming drum beats and stuff. There's nothing like that, you know? Just, you know, you can do anything. You can just, and especially working on a computer with programming beats and shit, you know, you're not sure if something's working. You just randomly copy and paste, move stuff around, and it's like painting just free expression modern art. You know, anything works. It's strange.
It is a very strange thing. Painting with sounds, definitely. I mean, it really opens up those different parts of the brain that helps you finish. You know, like you'll be trying to write a song and be like, oh, you know what? That line actually works really well in this poem. And you'll be trying to write a poem and be like, you know, oh, actually, this line works really well in this song. And then, you know, and even for me sometimes, drawing is my first passion. I used to watch Stan Lee VHS tapes growing up and just, like, copy Silver Surfer and Deadpool and X-Men, just, like, trace over them and redraw them as much as possible. And the images that you can create with words, just sometimes, like, you have to translate it. Like, you have to draw it to actually get it out, you know?
It
can be kind of an OCD thing, for me, at least.
Cool, so. I'm looking forward to hearing some music. It's like, hopefully hopefully some time opens up. With I'm wrapping up some projects now, and I'm actually looking forward to getting back and doing some music myself. You know, getting ready to move back into that. And it's always good. It's always good just to move side to side with things you're working on, because like you said, all of a sudden it just opens up a whole new pocket of inspiration or whatever you want to call it. It's all good.
Mm-hmm. Looking forward to May too, getting out there and you and I reading and just, you know, generally just hanging out. Pretty excited for that.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be a lot of fucking fun.
Fuck yeah.
I want to thank you for setting some time to come on the show today. The show's pretty much wrapping up now. But before you go, I wanted to read a poem, and I want to hear your reaction to it. This is a poem, if you don't mind, given a tell me what you think of it. I think it's a pretty badass poem. It's from my good friend of mine, Mark Brunetti. His name has been popping up a lot. He's a really cool dude from Jersey. He writes some really cool poems that are pretty heartfelt and pretty accessible in a strange way. This poem is called My Redemption. With a complete freedom after 19, the jail is and people. But I want to feel like Andy Dufresne when he gets the books for the Starkville Library. After 6 years being left, 2 letters a week instead of one, and becoming even more persistent. Then, over the loudspeakers to all the prisoners. I want to look him in the eye for a short moment, turn up the volume, and turn away, knowing that the next day I'd return to the courtyard or the hall want to be on the rooftop of a building drinking beers after laying down tar, like waiters and waitresses taking shots bar in the middle of their shift in front of the customers to feel a little more human. Some people want to feel that moment when Ant escapes jail and is looking up at the sky with arms outstretched. Not me. I want to live absurdly all the time and play Mozart over loudspeakers to all the prisoners in the courtyard. That's a poem by Mark Brunetti that's called My Redemption.
That is fucking amazing. I love that so much. Stephen King is one of my heroes, and that book, that movie. I honestly got fired because I watched that movie in a coffee shop one time that I was working at. I had it on while we were. And
You got fired for watching that movie?
Yeah, I was working, and generally they wanted Food Network on or, like, you know, something that was pretty PG, pretty G. There was families and stuff that came in there, but I'm not known to give a fuck. So, and whenever Andy Dufresne speaks, I listen. So, that was an amazing poem. I really love that. I really recognize with that very deeply. Definitely.
Yeah, me too, man. I feel the same way. Fucking Andy Dufresne and all he stood for, right? Rock on. Yeah. Well, hey man, this is a really great on the show for this long. I'm glad we got to talk extendedly, and I hope you finish off the rest of your evening as good as I'm going to finish off mine.
Oh yeah, definitely. I appreciate it, bud. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, man. I'll see you in our ongoing cyberspace chat.
Yep. Take care, man. Catch you around.
Yeah. Later, brother.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to The Unknown Show. I'm glad you were able to tune in, and I hope you enjoyed listening and learning about Jen Mikowski and her new books that are coming out, and learning about Andrew Bogling, who writes as William Seward Bonney. Keep a lookout for his book of poems coming out, Sabretooth versus Galaxy versus Sabretooth, and click around. The internet's a big pool to drown in. Thanks for listening. Have a nice night.